यद्धर्म सुनोर्वतराजसूये निरीक्ष्य दृक्स्वस्त्ययनां त्रिलोकः कार्ष्ण्येन चाद्येह गतं विधातु अर्वाक्श्रितौ कौशलमत्यमन्त्यत यद्धर्मसूनोर्वतराजसूये निरीक्ष्य दृक्स्वस्त्ययनां त्रिलोकः कार्ष्ण्येन चाद्येह गतं विधातु अर्वाक्श्रितौ कौशलमित्यमन्यत प्रभुस् यद्धर्म सुनो भतराजसूये निरीक्ष्य दृक्स्वस्त्ययनं त्रिलोकः कार्ष्ण्येन चाद्येह गतं विधातु अर्वाक्श्रितौ कौशलमित्यमन्यत माताजी यद्धर्म सुनो भतराजसूये Please repeat the synonyms. Yat, the form which, dharma sunoho, of Maharaj Yudhishthira, bata, certainly, rajasuye, in the arena of the rajasuya sacrifice, nirikshya, by observing, drak, sight, swastayanam, pleasing, trilokaha, the three worlds, kādsnyena, in sum total, cha, thus, adya, today, iha, within the universe, gatam, surpassed, vidhātuhu, of the creator, brahmā, arvāk, recent mankind, śritau, in the material world, kaushalam, dexterity, iti, thus, amanyata, contemplated. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Please repeat the translation. All the demigods from the upper, lower, and middle universal planetary systems assembled at the altar of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhishthira, after seeing the beautiful bodily features of Lord Krishna, they all contemplated that he was the ultimate dexterous creation of Brahma, the creator of human beings. Purport. There was nothing comparable to the bodily features of Lord Krishna when he was present in this world. The most beautiful object in the material world may be compared to the blue lotus flower or the full moon in the sky. But even the lotus flower and the moon were defeated by the beauty of the bodily features of Lord Krishna. And this was certified by the demigods, the most beautiful living creatures in the universe. The demigods thought that Lord Krishna, like themselves, was also created by Lord Brahma. But in fact, Brahma was created by Lord Krishna. It was not within the power of Brahma to create the transcendental beauty of the Supreme Lord. No one is the creator of Krishna. Rather, he is the creator of everyone. As he says in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattaha sarvam pravartate. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we welcome devotees to this morning's Srimad Bhagavatam. I think from next week what we will do is whenever we do Bhagavatam, we spend 5 minutes reading Prabhupada Nectar. By seeking the blessings of Srila Prabhupada and hearing something wonderful about His Divine Grace's pastime, it'll become very pleasing and it'll be the right platform for us to have the right mood for Bhagavatam. So I have a copy of Prabhupada Nectar. I think I'll just bring it. And that's what we used to do for many years. But somehow, you know, sometimes when programs morph, sometimes some things are here, some things are there. So we have to remind ourselves that we have to start by hearing Prabhupada. So this verse is actually continuance in the topic of remembrance of Krishna. The entire chapter is on remembrance of Krishna. And actually remembrance of Krishna starts actually by hearing about Krishna. One cannot remember someone unless one hears about them very well. When we hear and hearing attentively, then it becomes very much easier to repeat what we hear. And after repeating what we hear, then we can remember what we have heard and what we have repeated. That's why the process, Srila Prabhupada said, is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. And this Smaranam is the topic of this entire chapter. This entire chapter is known as Sri Krishna Smaranam, because we are trying to remember Krishna. So here you find that in this verse also, the devotees are urging us to remember a pastime. Pastime means any episode that is connected to Krishna, that becomes pastime. Our time is not pastime, you know, because our pastimes, nobody wants to hear. Actually, in today's world, everybody wants everyone else to hear their pastime. But the fact is, you know, everyone gets tired of each other's pastimes. But nobody gets tired of Krishna's pastimes. That is beautiful. And Krishna's pastimes are really passing time. When we say we have a pastime, actually it is not to pass the time. Because very often, time is controlling us. Time is passing us. We are not passing the time. That is why in Bhagavatam, it is stated that the nature of time is avinyataha. It is avinyataha. Atyakramat avinyataha. In the first canto, 13th chapter, Vidura advises Dhritarashtra, please leave. Don't waste time now. Why? Because kalaha paramadushtaraha. This time element is so powerful. The nature of time is to destroy what we have. This we must accept. whatever that is born in this world, time will destroy. It's only a matter of time, as they say. So whatever time we are passing, actually we think we are passing time. But we don't realize that actually time's nature is, it is avinyata, meaning it is imperceptible. You cannot catch time, but time always catches you. And the other point that's important is atyakramat. Atyakramat means overtake. So actually the nature of time is that eventually it always overtakes us. Always overtakes us. That is why as devotees, we must be very careful about how we use our time. Using time in the service of Krishna will ensure that time doesn't destroy us. If we don't use time in the service of Krishna, then time consumes us. This is very simple but very important formula. And time, because time's nature is that it agitates. So whenever we come in contact with time without Krishna, we also become agitated. This point we don't realize. The reason for the agitation in the material world is because we don't realize that we have no time and that time is catching us. That is why we become agitated. Now you see, we're always watching the time. Okay, we started the class now, we must finish at a certain time. So there's agitation. And then after a certain time, I have to do this on a Sunday, I have to buy this from Mustafa, then tomorrow morning there's work. So it's always agitation. So there's no such thing as we saying, I'm just passing time. No such thing actually. But when Krishna is passing time, he's really passing time. Why? Because Krishna has nothing to do in the world. Bhagavatam clearly tells us that Krishna has no occupation. Of course, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he has to keep himself active so that the whole world will follow his example. But other than that, Krishna is so powerful, just by spending his time in the remembrance of devotees and serving devotees and giving association to devotees, he is maintaining the whole creation. He is creating the whole creation and he is also annihilating the whole creation. So that is why when we remember Krishna, this remembrance makes us very purified. And purification by remembrance of Krishna leads to lack of agitation. The more we remember Krishna, the less agitated we are. It's a very good test to see how much you are remembering Krishna. If supposing some elements of material creation provoke you, that means your remembrance of Krishna is not strong. But if after the provocation you can immediately remember Krishna, then that provocation becomes our friend. Because on the basis of provocation, we are increasing our remembrance of Krishna. Vipadaha shantuta sasyat tatra tatra jagadguru. This is what Kunti Mata says. She's praying for difficulties because in difficulties there are agitations. So devotees don't mind if there are challenges. And all these challenges were faced par excellence by Yudhishthir Maharaj and the Pandavas. And that is why this verse starts by saying that Yudhishthir Maharaj was the most qualified personality to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. By the end of the Mahabharata war, when the Pandavas won the war, it was very, very clear already that the Pandavas were righteous and pure devotees. And at the Rajasuya sacrifice, when Krishna was actually called into the Rajasuya sacrifice as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Yudhishthira Maharaj, as the first personality to be worshipped before the sacrifice can begin, many personalities were demonic in tendency. They did not accept it. If you recall Mahabharata, you will know Sishupal was the one who stood up and made the most noise. So actually, even at that point of time, there were people who could see Krishna. This is the point Prabhupada brings up. They saw Krishna. They had darshan of Krishna. But because their eyes were not anointed with premanjana, in other words, there was no ointment of love for Krishna. So whatever that they saw of Krishna, they could not understand who Krishna is. This is how sometimes, if our consciousness is not correct, we may be able to see the deity, but it is only material sight. But it is not the spiritual sight. So therefore, at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Maharaj Yudhishthir was considered to be the most exalted personality. And that is why he had the right, the adhikar, to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. But despite the fact the Rajasuya sacrifice was so wonderful, and Bhagavatam and Mahabharata tells us, you had the most amazing personalities coming. You had all the devatas. The description here is the devatas from the upper, lower and middle universal planetary systems. They all came. In other words, the devatas don't only occupy Swargaloka. They are also very great personalities who also occupy other parts of the planetary system. This is important. For example, Kuvera does not stay in Swargaloka, but he is considered devata. So like that, all the devatas were invited. And Prabhupada writes that the devatas are considered, he translates, the devatas are considered to be the most beautiful creatures. Prabhupada writes in the purport, no one in the entire three worlds look as beautiful as the devatas. If you read about descriptions of how the devatas, the apsaras, the gandharvas, the chanaras, the siddhas, how they look in Bhagavatam, you realize that compared to them, human beings look very ugly. We look very bad, you know. You know, most of us, you know, either have no hair, no teeth, our skin is very bad, there's no effulgence, no tejas to us. In the morning, especially when we come for Bhagavatam, we really look very tired. So, no one looks very bright-faced, you know, it's very difficult. But in the higher planets, you find in the description of the kingdom of God, you find a description of the structure of the universe in the fifth canto, you find that these devatas, they look very beautiful. When Urvasi met Pururavas, and it is described in the ninth canto of Bhagavatam and the 11th canto, Aila Gita, you find there is a stark difference between the description of how Urvasi looks and even how Pururavas, the best of men, look. Urvasi's look was so beautiful that no woman in this world could even hold a candle to her in terms of beauty. So it is very clear that the devatas, their beauty was no match in all three worlds. But when everyone came for the Rajasuya sacrifice, instead of Yudhishthira Maharaj becoming the center point of all the attention, only Krishna became the center of everybody's attraction. Why? Because Bhagavatam tells us, after they saw the bodily features of Krishna, here Prabhupada is specifically translating that the devatas, they saw Krishna, but they saw his bodily features. They were attracted by his bodily features. Krishna did not speak so much in Rajasuya sacrifice. He was seated, but he did not have to speak for people to become attracted. He was completely, completely beautiful. And that is why when the beautiful features of Krishna was there, the devatas thought, oh, this Krishna must be the highest creation of Brahma, the most perfect creation of Brahma. So actually, in this verse, in one sense, the devatas show us the mistake that they are making. And Prabhupada highlights the mistake that they make. So actually the verse has two important points to it. The first is the greatness of the beauty of Krishna. And second is to understand why the devatas could make such a mistake. Because that will give a glimpse of why we also continue to make the same mistake sometimes. But first, the beauty of Krishna is considered very important in Bhagavatam. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you find there is one nice verse where Rupa Goswami sings very famously, and Prabhupada liked this verse very much. Smeram bhangi traya parichitam sachi vishtirna drishtim vamsi nyasta adara kilashayam ujvala chandrakenaha Govindam akyam hari tanumitaha keshi tirta upakante ma prekshita stavayadi sakhe bandusange astirangaha. This verse is the verse that best describes the beauty of Krishna and the effect of the beauty of Krishna. So actually, this whole verse that we are looking at today is subsumed in this one verse that Rupa Goswami chants in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The translation is very nice. Rupa Goswami says, my dear friend. So actually, he is addressing all of us. He calls us as my dear friend. And he says, if you are indeed attached to these worldly friends, if you are attached to family, if you are attached to friends, if you are attached to society, and that is true of all of us, isn't it? Very often, while we are doing devotional service, the real challenge of taking up devotional service is to put it in the center of our lives. Because generally, the center of our lives happen to be this material world. And very often, we are dictated by society, by what society thinks we are very, very careful of, We are also very particular about our friendship. We are also particular about love in this world. So Rupa Goswami warns us that, my dear friend, if you want to be attached to these worldly things, then do one thing. Ma prakshitas. Ma means, na means no in Sanskrit. If you have double na, it becomes ma. And ma means no, absolute no. So he says, you please don't do one thing. You please don't look at the smiling face of Lord Govinda. He says that there is a boy, you know, and he's standing on the shores of the Keshigad by the bank of the Yamuna River. This boy is bent in three sides, three bhangi. And he has a sideway and a sidelong glance. Sideway and sidelong are together. Sideway because he doesn't look at you straight. Krishna's nature is that he's crooked. So he never does anything straight, you know. Even he looks at you, he doesn't look at you straight. Have you noticed how sometimes people don't look at us straight? You walk past them, they don't see you. Then you pass them, like that they do. Right? They do that very often, you know. So that is sidelong. That is also coming from Krishna. We think it is from us, but actually it's coming from Krishna. Krishna is the originator of the sideway, sidelong glance. So Rupa Goswami says, there is this boy, and his name is Govinda. And he's standing by the banks of the Yamuna near the Ghat of Keshi. And he's so beautiful. Why is he so beautiful? Because first, he's bent in a very beautiful shape. And this bending again is the crookedness of Krishna. Again, Krishna is not straight, you know. Because very often, to bring us to Krishna consciousness, Krishna very often has to cheat us. Because if we are not cheated, then our experience is we don't take up Krishna consciousness. So very often you find the whole of Bhagavatam, there are so many cheating stories. For example, Diti wanted to kill Indra. So she convinced Kashyap. Then what happened was Kashyap thought, oh my God, I've promised Diti that I will give her whatever she wants. And Diti said, I want the child to kill Indra. And Kashyap thought, what to do now? So he thought, my wife has cheated me by being sweet, so she can get the boon she wants. So now I have to cheat her. So he said that there is a vow you must take for 1 year. It's Pumsavana vow. If you take it for 1 year and you don't break any of the vows, you will get a son who will kill Indraha. But if you break anything in the vow, then you will have a son who will become friendly to Indra, also Indraha. So she thought, all right, now tell me what I must vow. So he said, the first thing you must do is don't be envious. Second, don't be angry. Third, don't mean harm to others. Does this all sound very funny? Because the exact thing that she wanted was these three things. But he's telling her, if you want a son who's going to kill Indra, you first cultivate these three qualities. Non-enviousness, no harm for others, and then become fixed in devotional service. So very often, devotees follow the parampara of Krishna. How many of us came to Krishna consciousness because some devotee nicely tricked us and had nice prasadam? And after having wonderful prasadam, we thought, never mind, the lecture is boring, but at least at 8:30 there is nice prasadam. And we came. If you go to any center in the world, you'll find during lecture 20% attendance. Suddenly, lecture finishes, 80% spike. Everybody has come. I remember in Lakshmanan Temple, Brajhari Prabhu had the difficult task. He was given the task of counting how many people are there before he went upstairs. Remember, we used to set up the tables upstairs. He had to count the number of people, then we would put the plates. So he would count it because, you know, Brajhari Prabhu is a mathematician. So he would count earlier when the class was going to end. And he would count 60 people. Then he would come up and say 60 people. By the time people came up, there were 80 people. So we would ask him, Brajhari Prabhu, you're a mathematician, you're studying mathematics, where did the 20 come? Then he realized between the space he took the lift and came up, 20 people had come. Why? Prasadam time. So actually Krishna is considered tribhangi because he's never straight in his approach. But that is the only way to change our lives. So that's why this verse is telling us, if you look at the smiling face of Krishna, who is known as Govinda, because he brings so much pleasure by his beauty, the devatas became mesmerized when they saw the beauty of Krishna because he is Govinda. Only he can bring pleasure to our senses. Any other material being who brings pleasure to our senses will bring pain with it. Always remember that. Pain and pleasure are two pieces, but they are two sides of the same coin. Whoever in this world whom you love will bring pleasure to you. But at the same time, in that pleasure, they will also bring you so much pain. This is the nature of the material world. So we waste time running after everyone for pleasure, only to find that with the pleasure comes the concomitant pain. But with Krishna, the moment you see him, then you do anything for Krishna, it is never pain. It is always pleasurable. This is the smiling form of Govinda. He's standing by the banks of River Yamuna, by the Ghat of Keshi. He places his beautiful flute to his lips. And it is described by Rupa Goswami that his lips are like newly blossomed twigs. So if you put this whole picture of Krishna, he says, please don't see the smiling face of Govinda as he stands on the banks of the Yamuna at the Keshi Ghat. He will cast sidelong glances at you. He places his flute to his lips, which seem like newly blossomed twigs. His transcendental body, which is bent in three places, appears very bright. Ujvalam Chandrakena. It appears very bright in the moonlight. This is the greatness of the beauty of Krishna. So our acharyas tell us that the moment we see Krishna, then he's so powerful that just by his beauty, we can actually give up worldly attachments. This is the point to be understood. The beauty of Krishna is not sentimental, Prabhus and Matajis. Just by taking darshan of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra, if we take darshan with the right mood, then just by seeing the deity, even if we are rascal number one, our hearts become purified. And what happens? The attachment to this world gradually decreases. It doesn't have to go immediately. And it doesn't mean that we discard those who are dependent on us. But it just means we are not attached to them. There's a difference between discarding our duties and not being attached to our duties. No one said that we should not do our duties. No one said we should not serve our wives, our husbands, our children. But what is more important is to serve them in the context that we are not materially attached to exploit them, but rather that we are serving them. Attachment always equals to exploitation. Remember this. If you want to know whether you are attached to something, then the symptom of attachment is always exploitation. And exploitation, simply put in simple English, is what can I get from that? That is the meaning of exploitation. And you notice we live our life always like that. If anyone gives you a proposal, the first thing you think is, what can I get from that? Isn't it? If someone comes to you and tells something, you want to know, what can I get from him? Or what can I get from her? You get married to someone, you say, I love you very much. I'll accept you as you are. The moment after marriage comes, I don't like this about you. You change this about yourself. The person thinks, you got married to me. You told me such romantic things. Whoever you are, I will accept you. That was at the unexploitative stage. Because you could not obtain the object, you see. But once you obtain the object, then you want the object to serve you. You don't want to serve the object. This is the problem with the material world. But Bhagavatam tells us that when one sees Krishna and one becomes attached to Krishna, then the attitude of exploitation decreases. And instead of trying to utilize something for just our own material benefit, we try to serve in such a way that we also bring pleasure and peace to the hearts of others. And what is wrong with that? That is the noblest thing to do in this world. If a devotee can touch the hearts of other living entities such that they become peaceful in their life and not agitated, then we are really servants of the Lord. Then Krishna becomes very happy. So this is a very important point. The gopis, who are the greatest devotees of the Lord in Madhurya Ras, they sing very nicely in the 10th canto. I think it is 10th canto, 31st chapter, Songs of Separation. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the wonderful Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he chants, I think this verse is also quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Atitiyad bhavan ahanikananam trute yugayate tvamma pashyatam kutila kuntalam shrimukham chate jada udikshatam pakshmakridrisham atitiyad bhavan ahanikananam trute yugayate tvamma pashyatam kutila kuntalam shrimukham chate jada udikshatam pakshmakridrisham. So the gopis are also very attracted to the form of Krishna. They say in this verse, they say that Krishna, when you go to the forest during the day, you know, the gopis are singing. They say, Krishna, in the morning you wake up, then after quick breakfast you go to the forest. Why? Because you go and tend to the cows and the calves. that was Krishna's pastime, to spend time with the cows and the calves. So they say that when you go, at that time, we don't see your sweet face. And the gopis remember Krishna's sweet face because it is framed and surrounded by beautiful curling hair. Krishna's hair is not straight, it is curly. Sometimes, you know, I don't know how you know, but in Singapore we have this culture, those who have curly hair, they want straight hair. Those who have straight hair, they want curly hair. Those who have curly hair, they say we have to rebond the hair, we have to straighten the hair. But this is given to you by Krishna, so why we can't accept it? In fact, Krishna himself has curling hair, so what is the problem, you know? And Krishna never went for rebonding. So he is very happy with what he has. And that's why he's passing his time very peacefully. We are never happy with what Krishna gives us. So whatever time we have, we are passing it in agitated fashion. This is the problem. So the gopis extol the beautiful curling hair of Krishna. And they say that when you go like that, then half a second becomes as long as an entire yuga for us. It goes away. Because you go away for a long time in the day. And then when you come back, right, we see you and you become even more beautiful. Why? Because when Krishna has come back, he has got the dust of the hoof prints of the cows and calves on his body. And that mixed with the rich curls of blackness of his hair, Bhagavatam tells us, makes him look very beautiful. It enhances his beauty, you know. Sometimes when you have small children, Prabhupada in a lecture tried to explain this. He said when you're a small child, you dress him up very nicely, then he goes out and plays football with someone. And then he comes back looking really muddy, looking really perplexed. At that point of time, externally you may scold the child. But internally you say, hey, he looks very nice, you know. People think you're mad. But this is love, you see. So in material world, if you can have this kind of love for a child who looks very dirty, imagine the Supreme Lord when he chooses to look this way. So this is the point Bhagavatam says. So at that point of time, the gopis wait the whole day just to see Krishna. And for the whole day when Krishna has gone, when we come and take darshan of Krishna and then now Sunday we go back, do we really think of Krishna through the day? It's very difficult for us because we say we have so many things to do before tomorrow. But the gopis, they would see Krishna for a little while in the morning and then for the whole day they would have Krishna Smaranam, the remembrance of Krishna intensely. Intensely. Grahe, grahe, gopavaddu kadambe, sarve militva samavapya yogam, punyani namani patanti nityam, govinda damo dharma daveti, vikretu kama kilagopakanya, murari padar pitachit. Vrittihi dadyadikam mohavachavochat govinda damo dharmadaveti. These were the two things they were doing. Bilva Mangal Thakur, a great Vaishnava in our line, he says these are the two activities the gopis did. Grahe grahe. In all the houses when they had the free time, they just came together to remember Krishna. That's it. They just buried themselves in remembrance of Krishna. And this is what we should do when we have the time. Just you take out Srimad Bhagavatam, take out Bhagavad Gita, take out Prabhupada's books, and just bury yourself in it. By reading the pastimes of Krishna, Krishna book, for example, is such an amazing book that Prabhupada gave us. Just by reading and rereading and reading all the time, whether you're in the bus, MRT, whether you're getting scolding, you just take out the book and read. People think you're mad, but doesn't matter. At least you are with Krishna. It becomes very peaceful. So the gopis were doing that long before books were published. They had books in their heart. So they were remembering. So in every house, they remembered Krishna only. And because of that, they were free. Then when they went to the marketplace, because they had their duties to do, they were told to sell all the products of milk, you know, ghee, cheese, right? You have butter, curd, all these things we had. And all these dairy products came from the cows. So the gopis could not follow Krishna. So they just went and they sat by the marketplace. But instead of just selling these products, Bhagavatam tells us, instead of advertising these, they would chant the names of Krishna. They would chant Keshava, Govinda, Madhava. And people coming to buy these things would think these girls are mad. Instead of publicizing what they are selling, they are shouting some boys' names. But they were always remembering Krishna. So that is how, as devotees, we have to steal time to remember Krishna. It is not that because we are working 12 hours a day that we cannot remember Krishna. No. That is the excuse of the mind. All we have to do is steal time to remember Krishna. 2 minutes here, 3 minutes there, 5 minutes there, 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here. Now you add up and you have taken 1 hour of your time today to remember Krishna. It's only whether your determination to remember Krishna is infallible. In the words of the churning of the milk ocean, there is one verse there where the description of Krishna is Ajita, whose determination is infallible. Ajita normally refers to one who cannot fall, but Prabhupada describes Ajita as one who is infallible by determination. So if our determination to remember Krishna cannot fall, infallible means cannot fall, then in any circumstances we will find a way to remember Krishna. We will not run away from trying to remember Krishna. This is the mood of devotee. Even you, if you complain, even if you sit down and say, Prabhu, I don't have time for Krishna, that time you took to complain, you can remember Krishna. Isn't it? Instead of sitting down and discussing why I cannot remember Krishna, better you sit down and discuss why you should remember Krishna. It is much better. Some devotees become very disturbed by material problems. But that time that they are disturbed, if they remember one shloka of Krishna, the material problem goes. Why? Because they are remembering Krishna. So that's why the gopis, when they chant this verse, that you go and you come back, and we curse the creator, because in his creation, Brahma, he created the world very nicely. No, we won't fight with him, the gopis say. But he had one problem. Brahma created eyelids. And when the eyelids blink, at that time, that blinking is half a second, the gopis say. But for them, it is like a yuga. Yuga is thousands and thousands of years. Even if you take the shortest yuga of Kali Yuga, it is 432,000 years. So for them, half a second equals to 432,000 years on the downside. Not Satya Yuga. So if you think that way, that's how much the gopis were remembering the form of Krishna. And that's how much they were attached to the form of Krishna. We blink 100 times, but we don't say, oh, I haven't seen Krishna. Oh, blink again, I can't see Krishna. We don't say that, you know. Because when we see the beauty of Krishna, we don't contemplate on it. We just see and we go. There's a vast difference between a pure devotee and a struggling devotee. A struggling devotee never contemplates on Krishna long enough. So the mind doesn't rest on Krishna. It goes immediately to other material attachments. That is why we don't absorb Krishna's beauty. But those who sat in the Rajasuya sacrifice, the devatas, they could see the beauty of Krishna and they became very absorbed. And at the higher levels of devotional service, you find Rupa Goswami meditates, Smeram Bhangi Traya. He meditates on the form of Krishna. When Prabhupada saw the form of Krishna, I forget which form in Leelamrita, then he chanted this verse. When he saw the form, I think it was Sadbhuj form. He saw the form of Krishna as Sadbhuj or Chaturbhuj. And then he chanted Smeram Bhangi Traya. This verse he chanted. So that means these acharyas are telling us that beauty of Krishna is not just based on physical beauty. The beauty of Krishna is deeper. Beauty of Krishna leads to remembrance of pastimes of Krishna. That is why the beauty is very wonderful. So these two verses we must remember. The gopis remembering Krishna and longing for Krishna when they see the beautiful form of Krishna. And then after that, the gopis also sing very nicely. A few verses, a few chapters before that, they say this very nice verse. Akshvantaram falamidam naparan vidhama sakya pashun anuvisheshayato vayasya vaktram rajesa shutayo anuvenu jushtam yaivani pitam anurakta kataksham. Kataksham. This verse is coming from, this verse is quoted by Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it is actually found in Bhagavatam. I know the CC, it is 4th chapter of Adi Leela, and it is 155 text. If you look at that, you'll know where it is in Bhagavatam. But the verse is very nice. The gopis say, oh friends, the eyes that see the beautiful face of the sons of Maharaj Nanda, those eyes that see the beauty of Krishna and Balram, those eyes are considered fortunate. As these two sons entered the forest surrounded by their friends, bringing with them the cows, they hold their flutes to their mouths and they glance lovingly upon the residents of Vrindavan. For those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision. Repeat this point. Very nice. For those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision. This is the purpose why Krishna has given us eyes. We should always remember that the whole creation is the creation of Krishna. If one develops the mood of the gopis, then wherever we see the hand of Krishna, there is no greater object of vision for us. That is why in all circumstances of difficulty, the gopis could see Krishna. They actually had physical sight of him for a very short time. How many years they saw Krishna? They only saw him for about 11 years. After he left Mathura, they didn't see him until Kurukshetra. That's a long, long time. Long time. And by the time they saw him, Krishna was already kingly, princely. That mood of Vrindavan was not there, so to speak. But they never left Krishna. And Krishna never left them. This is the point that we must remember. So, though the gopis are considered the masters of remembering the beauty of Krishna, they actually had very little actual darshan of Krishna. Prabhupada followed the instructions of his spiritual masters 100%. But he had very little time physically with his spiritual master. Hardly 5-6 meetings. Hardly. And yet, every meeting, the object of his vision was only Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj's teachings. And similarly, the object of the vision of the gopis was always the beautiful pastimes of Krishna. This is the true meaning of actually contemplating on the beauty of Krishna. Krishna himself, Bhagavatam tells us, is mesmerized by his own beauty. Forget the devatas. Now forget the gopis. Forget the residents of Vrindavan. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you read Adi Leela, there's an entire portion there where it is stated that Krishna himself found his beauty so wonderful. And that is one of the confidential reasons why Krishna decided I should come now as Mahaprabhu. Because how can I appreciate my own beauty? You know, unless you have a mirror, you can't see how good you look, isn't it? So Krishna was thinking, how do I appreciate my own beauty? So when I try to appreciate my own beauty, I become sorrowful. So better now, I take the form of the mood of the devotee who can actually see this beauty. And this is one of the confidential reasons why he came as Mahaprabhu. And in Bhagavatam, so nicely it is stated that the beauty of Krishna has one natural strength. This is a very nice point Prabhupada makes. The beauty of Krishna has one natural strength. It thrills the hearts of all men and women, beginning with Krishna himself. This is in Adi Leela, 4th chapter, 147th verse. Prabhupada liked this verse very much. Why is it called thrilling? Because Krishna consciousness is very exciting, isn't it? That's why we dance. That's why we take prasadam. Prasadam is very exciting. You know, every time we come, we think, what's today's feast, you know? We become very excited. Many devotees come just so that we can have nice kirtan. We become excited to meet wonderful devotees. When sannyasis come and give us nectarian lectures, aren't we thrilled by them? So that is why the beauty of Krishna is the source of all this. All minds are attracted by hearing his sweet voice and flute and by seeing his beauty. Even Lord Krishna in Chaitanya Charitamrita makes effort himself to taste that sweetness. And then Prabhupada goes on to say, and he translates in Adi Leela, that when the gopis saw their beloved Krishna in Kurukshetra, after a long separation, do you know what they did? Prabhupada used two words. They secured and embraced him in their hearts through their eyes. Beautiful point. This is the essence of beauty. They secured and embraced him in their hearts through their eyes. And they attained a joy so intense that not even perfect yogis can attain it. This is the way to accept the beauty of Krishna. In fact, to see Krishna, we should not see Krishna with our eyes. We should see Krishna with our hearts. This is the point. And that is why it is very nicely stated that those who can see Krishna, what happens to them actually is a very practical thing happens. Chitraketu Maharaj, you all know, was a great king in Bhagavatam. And his son died. Though he wanted a son for so many years, he could not get. For a while, he thought that he would become completely morose without a child. Then, by the blessings of sage Angira, he received a son. But when the son came, it became very difficult for him. Because by the envy of the other queens, they poisoned the son, his only son, the object of his great affection, such that the boy died. It was a great tragedy for the kingdom and a greater tragedy for the king. Chitraketu Maharaj was so besotted with grief that his whole kingdom was plunged into similar grief. Bhagavatam tells us at the opportune time, Angira Rishi brought Narada Muni and they both came to see Chitraketu Maharaj. And they preached to him on the basis of Krishna consciousness, the temporary nature of the soul. And though his heart was already becoming convinced, Narada Muni then asked that this living entity who was dead before them, he called the soul who had just left this body, he summoned it to come back to the body and occupy it, and behold your father who is now lamenting for you. And when the child woke up because the soul obeyed the orders of the pure devotee Narada Muni, the child asked a very powerful question. Which father? Which father? In which life? Because I've had so many fathers, and I've had so many mothers, I've had so many children, I've had so many wives. But which life are you talking about? And at that point of time, that philosophy shattered the ignorance of Chitraketu Maharaj. And at that point of time, because he was initiated into Krishna consciousness and given initiation by Narada Muni, he took a wonderful mantra and learned how to perceive the form of the Lord in his heart on the platform of devotional service. And in the 6th canto, 16th chapter, there's an entire chapter where he's chanting beautiful verses in glorification of the Lord. And at the end of the glorification of the Lord, just for a short period of 15 days or so, Chitraketu Maharaj took darshan of the Lord in form. Krishna comes in the form of Lord Sankarshan and he gives darshan to Chitraketu Maharaj. So this is the physical, spiritual beauty of the Lord before Chitraketu Maharaj. And when he sees him, Chitraketu Maharaj then experiences a great, great, great change. And this verse is 6.16.31. Now that we understand the beauty of Krishna, now we know that how we must perceive the beauty of Krishna on the platform of devotional service, the way the gopis, the way Rupa Goswami, the way the acharyas have given us. Now we also understand what happens when we are performing serious devotional service and taking darshan of Krishna. Here the verse tells us, Tad darshana dvasta samasta kilbishaha swasta malanta karano bhyayan munihi pravriddha bhaktya pranaya shulochanaha prahrishta roma nama adi purusham. The translation is very nice. As soon as Maharaj Chitraketu saw the Supreme Lord, the first thing that happened to him when he saw the beauty of the Lord was he became cleansed of material contamination. This is the first thing that happens when we see the beauty of Krishna. Whatever material contamination in the heart, it's taken out. So sometimes you may say, but Prabhu, I just saw Krishna. I still feel contaminated. What's wrong, you know? The reason is that we are not seeing Krishna with our hearts. And we are not seeing Krishna with devotional service. If we see Krishna with devotional service, then the material contamination will go. It will go. And that is what Chitraketu Maharaj did. When people read this verse, they think, so he saw him, material contamination went. But remember, for 15 days, 24 hours, he did nothing but do devotional service. And then he qualified himself to see Krishna. So for us to actually understand and appreciate the beauty of Krishna, we have to qualify ourselves on the strength of devotional service. And that qualification comes by hearing, by speaking about Krishna. The gopis qualified themselves to drink in the beauty of Krishna. Because grahe grahe, gopa vaddu kadambe, always they were remembering Krishna at every point of their lives. So material contamination leaves the heart and we become situated in original Krishna consciousness. This is the first symptom when we take in the beauty of Krishna. Then, what happens? Chitraketu Maharaj became silent and grave. Remember SG, Singapore, SG. Remember silent and remember grave. The moment you take darshan of the Lord and you're doing nice devotional service, Krishna gives you the blessing of silence. Silence means we don't talk nonsense. Not that we don't talk, but we talk. But whatever we talk is about Krishna, related to Krishna. So if two devotees meet, they will talk something about Krishna at some point. Some service, something that they can do for Krishna. This is the mood of a devotee. They will not come together and talk about the third person. You know, in Vedic culture, they say, when three people are talking to each other, they talk about the fourth person. When the third person has left, the two persons remaining will speak about the third person. And when two persons are talking and one person leaves, that person still needs to talk about that. He finds another friend and starts talking to him about the third person. This is the nature of the material world. That is why silence in devotional service does not mean we become quiet. We become quiet to the material topics, but we become very loud to the spiritual topics. So he became silent and he became grave. Another point our acharyas say about silent is that we reflect on our own devotional service. That is the meaning of silence. Instead of reflecting on other people's devotional service, Prabhu, you know, I see you're not chanting very nicely. I see you don't bow very nicely. Your tilak is a bit crooked. Instead of saying all these things about people, better we just keep our mouth zipped and concentrate on Krishna. Better we reflect on ourselves. When Parikshit Maharaj was born, he was looking everywhere for Krishna. He was assessing the world. Parikshit means to examine. He was examining every nook and corner for Krishna. We should not examine every nook and corner for imperfections. That's what we do. But instead of doing that, we should see the hand of Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj saw the hand of Krishna in the curse of the Brahmana. That is why he is known as Parikshit. He reflected on himself, sat down, didn't waste time finger pointing, blaming people, heard Bhagavatam, and finished his life. Better we also do that. Because we don't know when our life will be finished. At least he had notice, 7 days, then you're gone. We have no notice. We have no idea. After we walk away from the center, or maybe in the center we may go, or maybe while having prasadam, just when that last bit goes in, we are gone. Who knows? Anything can happen. Washing hand in the toilet, we collapse. People leave just like that. Yamaraj doesn't wait, okay, you take bath, then I'll take you away. No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Long time ago in Wellington, one devotee died while he was taking snan, and he collapsed in the bath and he just died. And when they came, they found that the water was going on and he had left. And one devotee, I remember, asked my Guru Maharaj, you know, why, you know, Yamaraj did not wait for him to finish bath? What to say? There's nothing to say to such questions, except for the fact that death waits for no man. So before that happens, better we reflect. That is silence. And those who are silent, then they understand this point of death. And that is why they become grave. Grave means dhira. And grave also means we remember our grave. Right? Graveyard. We remember the day of our death. And knowing that, we know that time is precious. So whenever we can come to take darshan of Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, we should take them into our hearts. We should be very peaceful. And you find, as he became that way, because of love for the Lord, tears fell from his eyes, his hair stood on end, and with great devotion and love, Chitraketu Maharaj offered his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the mood. And Prabhupada writes in the purport so nicely, you know. He says, if one regularly sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the temple, by the way, that applies directly to us, right? So let's hear the purport. Prabhupada says, if one regularly sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the temple, one will gradually become disinfected of material desires. What a nice point. One becomes gradually, it doesn't become overnight. It's not an overnight thing. Millions of years of not remembering Krishna doesn't mean that overnight we remember Krishna. But gradually we'll become disinfected of what? Of material desires. Simply by visiting the temple and seeing the deity. And when one is freed from all the results of sinful activities, one will become purified. And with a healthy mind, completely cleansed, he will increasingly make progress in Krishna consciousness. So if anyone asks the question, how to increasingly make progress in Krishna consciousness, 6.16.31 gives the entire formula. Don't have to look anywhere else. It's all found in one verse, given to us by his divine grace. The whole formula is there. And it starts by contemplating on the beauty of Krishna. So this is the part on the beauty of Krishna. Now to conclude, the second part of the verse addresses the other point. The devatas saw the beauty of Krishna, but they miss one very important point. They thought, wow, Krishna is the most beautiful, glorious, most perfect. Dexterous means most carefully constructed creation of Brahma. They got that part wrong. Somehow or another, the devatas got everything right. They saw Krishna so nicely, but they said, wow, when Brahmaji created this being, he did a good job. But actually, Prabhupada makes the correction that the devatas were mistaken. Because it's very clear that Brahmaji himself is created by Krishna. Brahmaji came out from the lotus flower of Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. Garbhodakashayi Vishnu comes from Karnodakashayi Vishnu. Karnodakashayi Vishnu is coming from the Chaturvyuha incarnations of the Lord. That comes from the first Narayana. First Narayana comes from the first Chaturvyuha incarnation of the Lord. And before that, he is coming from Balaram and Balaram, Sankarshan, and Sankarshan is coming from Balaram, and Balaram is coming from Krishna. So how far away is Brahma? Even from Krishna. Even from the original Krishna, Brahma is many, 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 many times removed. That's why he had to meditate for so long and perform austerity to understand that he is actually coming from the origin of all origins, and that is Krishna. So why do the devatas think that way? The answer is given in Bhagavatam. If you look in the 6th canto, 9th chapter, 25th verse, the answer is there. It's a very famous verse. Ya eka isho nijamaya yanaha sasarjayena anusjama vishvam vayam nayasyapi puraha samihitam pashyamalingam. It is the last line that is important for us. Pashyamalingam pritak ishamaninaha. The translation is nice. The devatas are singing this verse. This verse is sung by the devatas. So the devatas are singing at the 9th canto because they are in big trouble. That's normally the time when the devatas pray to Krishna. It's very consistent. One thing very consistent about the devatas is whenever they are in trouble, whenever it's a 999 emergency, instead of running here and there, trying to solve the problem, they are very consistent. They run to Krishna. Right? So in the 9th canto, they ran to Krishna. No, in the 6th canto, 9th chapter, they run to Krishna. In the 8th canto, they run to Krishna. 6th canto, they run to Krishna 2-3 times actually. But in this case, they ran to Krishna because Vritrasur, the great demon, had come to vanquish the entire clan of the devatas. Okay? And Vritrasur was so powerful, born of the austerity of his father Tvashta. And Vritrasur is not an ordinary personality because in previous life he was Chitraketu Maharaj. He was Chitraketu Maharaj. So he was very powerful. But because he was inadvertently cursed, because Narada Muni wanted to hasten his going back to Krishna, in the next life he took the form of a demon, physical form. But in his heart and consciousness he was always meditating on Krishna. And he was up against Indra. Because Indra, again, just to secure his position as Swargaloka's chief, he had somehow or another beheaded his guru Vishwakarma. No, was it Vishwakarma? Vishwarupa. He had beheaded Vishwarupa. And Vishwarupa's father was Tvashta. And Vishwarupa's only fault was that he was related on both sides, through mother and father, to the devatas and to the asuras. So when Indra told him, when you perform the sacrifice, you please do so much nice sacrifice that the devatas will become very strong to defeat the demons, Vishwarupa said, well, actually on my mother's side, they are my uncles. So let's do a bit of, you know, let's do a bit of parity. Let's do a little bit just to keep them neutral so that whenever they fight, it'll always be a draw. 0-0, 1-1, 2-all, 3-all, like that. But it will never be a clear victory. So when Indra was fighting, he thought, how come Vishwarupa is doing something so nice, but in every battle we fight, but we can't win, we don't lose either. So one day he sat close to Vishwarupa and then he heard all the mantras for the sake of the devatas, and then he heard in extra low tone all the mantras for the sake of the asuras. So without thinking, because he was so attached to Swargaloka, he did not think that Vishwarupa was a Brahmana. He just chopped off his head. And by that curse of chopping his head, Indra was now in trouble. Because Tvashta, the father, actually created Vritasur to kill Indra. So Vritasur comes and nobody can fight him. And now this verse is sung by Indra and company. The same devatas who see the beauty of Krishna at Rajasuya sacrifice, in the sixth canto they chant this verse. And they admit why they cannot see the supremacy of Krishna. In the same way, why in this verse they cannot see Krishna as the supreme. And the reason is simple. They say first, Krishna, you created us by your external potency. It is actually by your mercy that we are expanding this creation. So you see, they accept that actually Sasarja Vishwam, they are expanding this creation, but they are secondary creators. The chief is still Krishna. Krishna gives them the potency to create. For example, if mother and father have a child, they cannot correctly say that they are the creators of the child, because the potency to create is coming from Krishna. If Krishna does not give the potency, no matter how much they try, they will never have child. And even if they say that they cannot have child, they can have child. So many times we have seen this in the past. Prabhupada writes about this in the purports also. So the point is, without Krishna, nothing can come into being. Nothing can come into being. So the devatas accept it. But they say, in all these creations, you are creating everything by you being the super soul in our hearts. So actually Krishna in the heart as super soul, he is the inspiration for all creation. Whenever we do a service, we forget that the service is nicely performed because somewhere in that service, Krishna has inspired us. This is the beauty of Krishna. Those who see the beauty of Krishna, they translate that beauty into understanding that his beauty is also in giving us the chance to perform service. This is the meaning of beauty. So the devatas got that right. But now they admit the last point. We are unable to see you because all of us think that we are separate and we are independent. Pashyamalingam prithak. Prithak means different. Pashyamalingam prithak ishamaninaha. Each of one of us thinks that we are separate. And if you read the purport in the first line, Prabhupada says, here is an explanation of why the conditioned soul cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. This is the reason. This is the reason why Duryodhana saw Krishna face to face but could not see him face to face. You know what I mean? He could see him, but he could not accept him. So we can see Jagannath. But if we think we are independent of Jagannath, then we don't see him actually. This is the difference. So if we want to see Krishna, then we should understand that we are not separate and we are never independent. We are always dependent on Krishna. And we are dependent on the Vaishnava's mercy to come to Krishna. If we have that mood, then the beauty of Krishna we will accept in the right way. Then we will not say what the devatas have said here incorrectly. So the devatas are in a very, very unique position. They know they are at fault. They can diagnose their disease. At the same time, they are caught by the disease. Doesn't that sound familiar? Isn't it? Because we are also suffering the same disease. I can sit here and speak till the cows come home. Nice tattva. But the moment I go out, right, if something happens to some object that I like, oh, I can't take it. Because I'm attached to it. I cannot accept that this is what Krishna wants. It's very difficult for us. So whenever we want to be separate from the vision of the Lord, we lose the vision of the Lord. It's a nice point. When we are separate from the vision of the Lord, we lose the vision of the Lord. When we are separate from the interest of the Lord, we lose the vision of the Lord. This is very important. And the result of it is, Tato anyata kinchana yad vivekshataha pritak drishashtat kritarupanamabihi. What is the next two lines? I forget. Na karhichit kwachi dushtita nok. Na karhichit kwapicha dushtita matihi. Then what is the last line? Labheta vata natahu ivaspadam. Very important verse. Because in this verse, Narada Muni tells to Vyasadev, anything that you describe, which is separate from the vision and the interest of the Lord, will only serve to agitate your mind. So the next time, Prabhus and Matajis, we become agitated, even though we are looking at Krishna, when we are still agitated, please remember, the reason for it is deeper in the heart. We cannot accept what Krishna has given us, because we are Pashyamalingam Prithak Ishamaninaha. We want to be independent of him. No, Krishna, you don't know. I'm telling you this is good for me. So you have to give me this. Then what to say? Then we are independent. No, Krishna, this is the only way. Okay? This is the way of devotional service. I know better. So you have to give me now these things. Then only I can do nice devotional service for you. Then of course we become disturbed. Because the very thing you ask is not what you deserve. So separate, independent nature. This is the biggest obstacle to Krishna consciousness. But then having said that, we should conclude then why are the devatas still considered devotees of the Lord? They are considered devotees of the Lord because even though they are in danger, they don't, unlike the demons, they don't just do things on their own. When they are in difficulty, they have faith in Krishna. In the churning of the milk ocean, if you remember, the devatas were very disturbed because the demons became too strong. Again, they come to Brahma. Brahma and them go to Krishna. Nice prayers are there. Krishna's heart melts. Krishna says, go and churn the milk ocean and take out Amrit. But when you do that, you have to be very, very peaceful and you should not be agitated. You should be patient and you should not be angry. In anger and agitation, nothing is achieved. But in peace and patience, everything is obtained. Such nice advice from Krishna. And those who take the beauty of Krishna into heart, they are never agitated or angry. In fact, they are very peaceful and they are patient. We must understand, Prabhus and Matajis, that there is a time for everything. And Krishna told them in the churning of the milk ocean, now your time is not there. You have to make truce with the demons and get this nectar, otherwise you will never win this. Sometimes we push, you know, sometimes we're in family situation, sometimes we preach to someone, and we push them very hard with a gun on the head, you have to become Krishna conscious. But we don't understand that everything has a time. Better we just sow the seed and serve them lovingly. And at the appropriate time, Jagannath himself will transform the hearts of the devotees. This way we are not agitated. This way we are peaceful and patient. Otherwise we are always in the numbers game. Otherwise it becomes a corporate culture. How many things here, how many things there, why we are not getting enough people. Prabhupada's mood was never that. Prabhupada always said, do not be discouraged. You plan as big as you want for Krishna, but after that you please leave it to Krishna. This is the mood. So the devatas had one qualification. They obeyed Krishna. Krishna told them, you go and churn the milk ocean. Many things will come out. Don't be attracted to them. Let the demons take them. Don't worry about them. But at the end, Amrit will come. And even when Amrit comes, don't run after the Amrit. The demons will grab it. Instead, be peaceful. Wait. Very difficult, huh? Imagine, you know, when Amrit is coming and everybody is running after it. If you're in Singapore, particularly with the Kyasu culture, it's very difficult to be to actually have this maintenance of discipline. Very, very difficult. Very difficult. But they agreed because they're devotees. So they went to shake hands with Bali. Bali shook hands with them. They went to carry Mandara Mountain. Mandara Mountain, they were very strong, they carried, but Mandara Mountain is solid gold, you know. It's not 24 karat gold, huh? It's solid, pure gold. And Mandara Mountain was so powerful, eventually they lost stamina and it crushed them. The devatas shouted for Krishna. The demons just shouted, ah! But because they shouted for Krishna, Krishna came on Garuda. And just Garuda picked up Mandara like you pick up tissue paper. And Krishna just glanced over the devatas and the demons. Why did he glance over the demons? Because if demons didn't get up, the devatas won't get Amrit. So Krishna is the well-wisher of everyone. But he favors the devotees. So he got both of them up. They became refreshed. They run to the milk ocean. And Vasuki is there, the snake. They tie him around. The devatas led by the Lord, they come in front to hold. The demons, very silent, became very angry. Sulky, you know. Sometimes have you met people when they sulk? You tell them, Prabhu, go to the back. Not happy. So in Bhagavatam, they give the description. The demons sulked. They refused to move, you know. Then the Lord understood. The demons felt, we are very knowledgeable, expert in Vedic knowledge, expert in culture and everything. You want us to hold the back of the snake? Not very auspicious. We will hold the front. So there also Krishna adjusted. He told the devatas, never mind, we will go to the back. This is devotional service. Devotees always learn how to adjust to circumstances. Not that this is the standard. You don't come to a standard, you're going to hell, Prabhu. I'm very sorry. Once upon a time, somebody was kind to us, forgave us, and that's why we're here today. But once we have come to a standard, we want everyone to come to the standard. If Krishna could adjust with the demons, why can't we adjust with our own minds? Because our minds are demonic. So this is the point. So when he became this way, then all the devatas moved with him. And when they moved with him, what happened was they started churning. Now the problem is, there's a reason why Krishna went to the front. He was actually helping the asuras. But these silly people, they didn't realize by standing in front, Vasuki became very tired. And he started emitting poison. And the poison came to who first? All the asuras. So they were inhaling poison, exhaling poison, inhaling poison. There was no more oxygen. There was only poison. And they were feeling like they were fainting. Even at the back, the devatas were exhaling and inhaling all this fume. They all became blackened, Bhagavatam tells us. So at that point, they became very discouraged. Vasuki, Prabhupada writes, looked like he was about to die. Vasuki, the snake, the serpent, looked like he was about to die. So at that point, Krishna realized, my God, these people really can't do anything on their own. So what does Krishna do? He comes, right? And he comes in the form of light, gentle breeze and nice rain. And he gives them some semblance of coolness. This is Krishna. But now as they churned enthusiastically, Mount Mandarad had no support and it went down. Again, they became disheartened. Krishna took the form of Matsya, the tortoise. Kurma, the tortoise. And he lifted this wonderful Mandara. Mandara mountain is huge, but Bhagavatam tells us the back of Kurma, the Lord, was 800,000 miles long. That was the size of his shell. Bhagavatam gives you the description. 800,000 miles, inconceivable for us. And when he held it up, he realized that they didn't have strength to churn. So the Lord also had to churn. He had to work hard. But Bhagavatam says that churning was nothing for him. It is like, you know, when your back is itching, what do? You go and put yourself to the back of the wall and you scratch. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, we do it, you know. When we grow older, we do these things because we don't care. But when we're young, we don't do this. So people do that. They go and stand there and they scratch. That is also coming from Krishna because he started it with Kurma Avatar. It was just scratching. And it was nothing for him. But even then, they could not churn effectively. So what happened? The Lord had to come as a thousand-handed form on top Mount Mandara. He sat there and using it as a fulcrum, he also churned. So the Lord came as the thousand-handed form, came as Mount Mandara, came in the form of gentle breezes and nice rain. Then he entered into the hearts of Vasuki in the mode of ignorance. He entered into the hearts of the demons in the mode of passion. And he entered into the hearts of the devatas in the mode of goodness, just to encourage them to continue the churning. How much help they had! They were practically all round. Maheswara Krishna had just done the whole pastime himself. This is the greatness of the Lord. Why? Because the devatas had faith in him. Even though they were mistaken in their idea of who is the creator, even then see the kindness. This kindness of the Lord, to conclude, is his real beauty. This kindness is his real beauty. His mercy is his beauty. That is why his beauty as we see it is enhanced. It's so beautiful because his quality is beautiful. His mercy is beautiful. Everything about him is beautiful. If we had time, we should have sung Adharam Madhuram actually. Because this is the beauty of Krishna, that he's so kind. And at the end of it, when all the churning was done and Dhanvantri comes up with Amrit, the devatas remembered Krishna because the demons jumped on the Amrit. And they started fighting amongst themselves. And then Krishna said, I'm very happy with you all. Meaning the devatas. You have obeyed me to the end. And now he took the last form. In this Kurma avatar, how many forms in the churning of the milk ocean Krishna took actually? It's unprecedented. In whole Bhagavatam, you will never find in one episode, he took so many different forms. And the last form he took was Mohini Murti. And when he came as Mohini Murti and the demons who were fighting to get the Amrit, when they saw her, what happened was, immediately the demon said, beautiful lady, where have you come from? Are you married? This is demon. The moment you see someone, you know, you never ask, you look very nice, are you married? If anyone did that in our center, Mataji's, you please tell me. I'll have to talk to that Prabhu, you know. But in Bhagavatam, the demons do it, you know. They come up to him and say, my dear beautiful lady, you are so beautiful. You look like this, you look like that. Are you married? And then they said that now we are fighting and, you know, we have lost our senses. See how smart the demons are. They know they have lost their senses, but they don't turn to Krishna. But even then, Krishna forces them now to turn to him in the form of Mohini. So they say, because you are very beautiful, we think you are very intelligent. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, this is the height of foolishness, that you connect beauty with intelligence. This is demonic mentality. So they say, because you're beautiful, you must be very intelligent. So I'm going to give you now the Amrit. And you now decide everything nicely for us. So Mohini Murthy said, very good. Go and take a bath because you all are filled with all this soot and everything. After that, offer oblations, sit down, do the mantra, sit on kusha grass. Then I will deliver everything to everyone. Everybody sits one row here, one row there. If you notice, even in those days, they didn't sit in circles. Huh? They sat in rows. They sat in rows. There is Vedic evidence for that also. And once they sat down, Mohini Murthy started from the devatas. Now, this is dangerous. But the demons were so attracted to the beauty of Krishna. See the beauty of Krishna. It's so beautiful. Even those who are independent, those who want to be separate, even they have to say, never mind. Doesn't matter. And they kept giving themselves the favorable arguments. No, no, she'll come to us. She'll come to us. Don't worry, don't worry. She finished the whole devatas. There was nothing left. And then she assumed the form of her real self, the Lord. And then the demons realized, we have been properly tricked. Properly tricked. And this is Krishna. And the reason why Krishna did that is because he is Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Mattaha Sarvam Pravartati. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. And if you read samanvitaha, bhava samanvitaha, word to word, Prabhupada says, is you please turn to Krishna with great attention. Isn't it? You read the word to word with great attention. Now you read the translation. There's no great attention there. It's not there. It disappears. Why? Because with great attention, Prabhupada has actually put it by saying, the wise who perfectly know this, engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. The great attention is found in the last three words, with all their hearts. In other words, one cannot love Krishna until one becomes greatly attentive to Krishna. And this is what Kunti Mata says in 1842 also. Twaime ananya vishaya. Matir, madhu, patir, asakrit. Right? Ratim, udvahata, adha, gange, vauham, udanvati. That all the rivers, just like the rivers go to the sea, may I, my Lord, twaime ananya, may I be undiverted in my attention to you. So let us pray to be undiverted in our attention to the beauty of Krishna. And when we do that, let us be attentive to what Krishna wants, not what we want. Let us be attentive to what the Vaishnavas will be pleased with, not what we will be pleased with. That is beauty. The gopis never thought Krishna must please us. They were always thinking how we should please Krishna. So we should work in such a way that we should always think, what would please Krishna? What would please the Vaishnavas? And then automatically the mind is controlled, the senses are controlled, and then we really contemplate on Krishna. Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Gurudev ki. Mithai Gaura Premanande. I have 5 minutes and I can take one question and then we are running off for another program. Are there any questions? Yes, Swami Prakash Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for the nice class.
Thank you for listening, Prabhu.
Prabhu, we hear that Krishna doesn't step out of Vrindavan even a moment. There is a verse, I don't remember the verse. How do we understand then that Krishna spent only 11 years and the rest of the time he was out of Vrindavan?
It's a nice point. It is stated in Bhagavatam that actually, factually speaking, Krishna left Vrindavan and never returned. And yet all the pastimes of Krishna speak about him in Vrindavan. So what's happening? First of all, the activities of Krishna are inconceivable, which means Krishna can be simultaneously in one place and not be in one place. So Krishna reserves the right to continue his pastimes in such a way that he enhances the remembrance of the devotees in the form of separation. So for the gopis, the leela always is that Krishna leaves and he leaves Vrindavan. Then the gopis remember all the pastimes that they had with him during the time when he is in Vrindavan. And those pastimes are enacted and re-enacted and enacted and re-enacted. Simultaneously, Prabhupada writes in the purports of Bhagavatam, actually Krishna originally never leaves Vrindavan. Because wherever Vrindavan is, Krishna is there. Because the mood of Vrindavan is what actually captivates Krishna. So actually, the sastras and acharyas tell us that factually speaking, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. But simultaneously, to continue his pastime and increase the remembrance of him, he appears to leave Vrindavan. And then he is in Dwarka. And while he is in Dwarka, he is Dwarkanath and Dwarkadish. But at the same time, his pastimes in Vrindavan continue. So who can understand this? Prabhupada says it's not possible for us to understand because Krishna is Achintya. And because he's simultaneously one and the same. So the Krishna in Dwarka, the Krishna in Vrindavan, and as Prabhupada said, the Krishna in any place where Vrindavan atmosphere is created is still Krishna. So when Prabhupada was asked this question, he would reply by saying, sastrically, it is correct that Krishna continues to stay in Vrindavan as the original form of Shamsundar. In fact, in one point, Prabhupada even makes the distinction that the Krishna in Vrindavan is considered the highest mood, and then the Krishna in Dwarka is in the mood of opulence. But at other points, Prabhupada says, there is no difference now between Krishna in Dwarka and Krishna in Vrindavan. Why? Because Krishna is absolute, Prabhu. When he is whole, he is whole. When he is separate, he is wholly separate. So whatever that he does is complete and it is perfect. That's why in the transcendental world, 2 plus 2 is 4, 2 minus 2 is 4, 2 divided by 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4, no 2 also 4, because it's always complete. But because our mental capacity is limited to the material sphere, it is impossible for us to fully grasp that fact. So Prabhupada said, grasp it on the point of faith. And Prabhupada said that wherever the atmosphere of remembrance of Krishna, Krishna Smaranam is there, then be sure that Krishna in his original form of Shamsundar is always there. So as long as we remember these beautiful shlokas, as long as we are unflinchingly attached to Bhagavatam, then Krishna is always there in his original form. That is sufficient for us. If we want to know the nitty-gritties of it, Prabhupada then told a devotee. One time a devotee asked Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada, how is the spiritual world? You say every walk is a dance, every speech is a song. You know, is there day, night in spiritual world? What does Krishna do? Does he do this? Does he do that? And Prabhupada said, why don't you just go there and find out? Just go there and find out. It's much easier. So this is the point that sometimes Prabhupada tried to tell us. So in this way, once we understand Krishna is absolute, Prabhu, then this point becomes less perplexing for us. Is that all right, Prabhuji? I can take one more question if it's not too long. Yes, Navagaura Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji, for the wonderful class. We quoted this verse 6.9.25. Which the demigods are praying to the Lord.
Yes.
And they are saying that they are unable to see because they think that we are separate and we are independent gods.
Yes.
But we also see that whenever they are in trouble, they reach to the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
So in a way, they are dependent on Him.
Yes.
So do they mean to say that they are dependent but they are not surrendered?
Good point. There are so many levels of surrender. Complete surrender would mean that a pure devotee is the person who completely surrenders. Very often what happens is for struggling devotees is that we surrender when we are in trouble or when we need to surrender. So, you know, on a need-to-know basis, we have this in the world, isn't it? So same thing for devotees. On a need-to basis, I will surrender to Krishna. On other days when everything is fine, when I can survive, then okay, Krishna is there, but it's all right. So that's the difference between the gopis and the devatas, for example. The devatas could understand technically, could understand theoretically, but because they were not surrendered totally, there were times, like this verse shows, that they could not properly understand who Krishna is. And it's the same for struggling devotees or devotees who come into the movement initially. We don't understand the import of 10.8, that Krishna is the source of all things material and spiritual. So very often when something material happens, we think it is not has nothing to do with Krishna. But even that has something to do with Krishna. But the great devotees see everything to do with Krishna. So because they are more surrendered, Prabhu, their level of dependence allows them not to be independent, but dependent on Krishna, very naturally. So if we increase the progress and quality of devotional service, Krishna willing, by the mercy of Prabhupada and the devotees, we will also come to the point where it is not only in difficult times we remember and become surrendered, but in all times we are dependent on Krishna and we are very alert to the interest and vision of Krishna. So the devatas do us a big favor here because they show us how it's possible to understand something but and yet act in other ways. Because that understanding has not become realization. We have not practiced it yet. We are speaking about it, but we haven't put it into practice. That's why we are agitated. Is that helpful, Prabhu? Okay. Sorry, we don't have enough time now, and we have to stop here. But it's so nice to see devotees coming for Bhagavatam. Please keep coming. You'll find that Bhagavatam is very sweet, very relishable, and you'll find that you don't sleep actually when you hear Bhagavatam. I know Bhagavatam is a great cure for insomnia. It is true. But somehow Bhagavatam is so powerful. The cure for insomnia is actually not to sleep. The cure for insomnia is that you sleep in a regulated way. So don't sleep when you're hearing Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam will make everything nice. And supposing nothing is nice, then come back to Bhagavatam again. And the more we are with Bhagavatam, the more we can tolerate the difficulties of the world. Hare Krishna. So we will serve prasadam now, Prabhu? Downstairs, downstairs. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Let's go, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki. Devotees who are going with me, we have to run. So let's go down. Hare Krishna. Sure, Prabhu.